Today on Straight Talk Africa, an update on Zambian politics. I recently returned from the beautiful Southern African nation, where I discussed the democratic challenges facing the nation with some of the main stakeholders. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali. Our discussion today centers on different views regarding Zambian politics. Zambia's main opposition leader spent most of the last 4 months in prison, accused of treason, allegedly detained for failing to give way to President Edgar Lungu's motorcade. My VOA colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
Hakainde Ichilema says the criminal justice system in Zambia is broken and calls his 4 months in prison for alleged treason and abuse of the judiciary by his political opponents. After his surprise release from a maximum security prison, Ichilema traveled to South Africa after speaking with us from his home near Lusaka.
If you like situation, is that we as a people are allowing our population to suffer, to go to bed without food. Amidst wealth, we have abject poverty. That, I must tell you, my dear friend, my dear brother, makes me turn in my bed every night.
President Edgar Lungu says he's ready to talk with anyone who wants to meet him on issues of governance and how to bring harmony to the country. The opposition leader was released from custody just over 2 weeks ago after being detained for allegedly failing to give way to President Lungu's motorcade. The charges against Ichilema are seen by many as part of a crackdown on dissent by Lungu's Patriotic Front government. Hours before the start of Ichilema's August 16th trial, all charges against him were suddenly dropped. Ichilema narrowly lost last year's presidential election, and he refuses to recognize President Edgar Lungu's victory and his administration. Many are strongly critical of his denouncing of Zambia's judiciary from abroad, rather than airing his grievances through established channels within Zambia.
I can assure you, one, it made us stronger than before we went into jail. Number two, and this is more important, we are not angry, we are not bitter.
President Lungu said, quote, "If you don't respect the sovereignty of your own country, no one will respect you." He says Zambians should be patriotic and discuss whatever issues they have within their own borders and not from foreign states. A similar message comes from Emmanuel Mwamba, the Zambian ambassador to South Africa. He accuses Ichilema of, quote, "peddling lies and falsehoods" during his recent 3-day visit to South Africa. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us is Henry Sakala, who is the founder of the Patriotic Front Party, Zambia Diaspora America. He joins us from the VOA Bureau in New York. Thank you so much for joining us, Henry Sakala.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, viewers.
I am terrific. I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Our pleasure is mine. I'm also humbled for you inviting me to the studios.
Thank you very much, sir. Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Ichilema says he is happy to be alive and out of prison. I recently spoke to him at his home in the suburbs of the capital, Lusaka. First of all, Mr. Hakainde Ichilema, I would like to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to interact with you at your residence in the Zambian capital of Lusaka.
Thank you very much, my colleague. You're welcome to our residence. You're welcome to Zambia. We're grateful to have you here.
It's really a pleasure, especially because There was a time, I remember, when we talked. Remember one time we actually hosted you via telephone link-up?
Yes.
And I once said that I was looking forward to visiting Lusaka and hopefully meeting you and exchanging some social amenities. And here we are.
Absolutely.
Talk to us about the deal that led to your freedom, as it were.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we can call it a deal, but I think I would like to define it as a situation, as a development that basically most people now understand that there are many things going on which are wrong in this country, and they've remained unresolved for a long time. And it had to take my incarceration, charged with the heinous crime of treason, to crystallize, the need to resolve these outstanding issues. And many of them are outstanding, which have created difficulties amongst ordinary citizens to conduct their life, to exercise their freedoms in them, full level. So this opportunity that has arisen, unfortunately, out of my incarceration, to resolve legacy issues is what I would define it. And this is what we believe we need to do going forward.
What are some of those outstanding difficulties?
We have a breakdown in the rule of law in our country. There are many areas where the rule of law is not applying, or it's being applied in a selective manner for the few and not for the rest of the members of our community society. We have a situation where human rights, basic freedoms, have been denied to the citizens of Zambia, again, selectively. We can move on with an electoral commission that has failed to deliver free and fair elections for quite some time. We have police brutality. To be honest, even extrajudicial killings in our country, a country that is supposed to be a haven of peace, a country that has been host to so many refugees over years, it's now created conditions that have resulted into the next point I'm going to make, political prisoners. We've returned to the days of having political prisoners in detention, police cells, in prisons. We have a judiciary that is making citizens find it difficult to run to that arm of government to seek resolution of conflicts as a last beacon, if you like, of conflict resolution. Very difficult. We have a criminal justice system that is, to use simple language, utterly broken. The list is long. But these are some of the issues. The press itself, you're a member of the press, is losing its freedoms. Freedom of the press. A few days ago, evidence of the denial of freedom of worship was experienced when we are not allowed to assemble for mass to celebrate our release. So the list is long. I think these are the issues that have brought the country to where we are.
But it took, for example, at least two very prominent personalities. We're talking about former Nigerian president, General Olusegun Obasanjo, retired but certainly not tired. It also took a big lady, the Secretary General of the Commonwealth. Why did it take those two people in order for the government of Zambia to make a decision about freeing you when you had actually been in prison for 4 months without trial? There must have been a deal.
Number one, it is a matter of, I think, denial. The country was in denial. Certain sections of the country was in denial for too long that there was no problem. There was no issue in the country. I think that delayed, as I called it, the crystallization of this acceptance that we have a problem.
Right.
So the country was in denial, especially those in authority. Because I think it didn't look, in their view, nice to accept and acknowledge that the country is going downhill. It's going down the tube. We have a situation where, even when there was acceptance by independent organizations, institutions, such as the church, such as the civil society, and professional bodies like the Law Association of Zambia, that there was tension, there was loss of human rights, denial of basic freedoms in our country, those in authority continued to apply negative, if you like, reaction even to those independent institutions. They spoke, the church spoke, described the situation correctly. And I hope in your work in Zambia, the colleagues that are handling you will be able to give you some of the statements that the church has issued to describe the tension, the challenges that the country was going through. But even that was ridiculed by the authorities. That's the second point. But around the second point, we must be able to appreciate the work that the churches did, the Catholic Church in particular, led by Archbishop Teles Fompondo, did a tremendous work. And when he raised these issues first, he was viewed as a lone soldier who is a little bit mischievous. Of course, later there was a turnaround from the authorities to accept what the churches were saying. So before the international figures came, there was pressure from the church, from the civil society, from Law Association of Zambia. Because don't forget that at this point, then and now, the ordinary citizen was so afraid of saying and doing anything.
Why?
Suppression. Detentions. Remember, I talked about political prisoners.
Correct.
So everybody knew if you said something, you may be picked up and be charged with a crime that is unbearable, and you'll be in jail, like many, including five of my colleagues who were arrested in August and were only acquitted a few weeks ago, having spent 1 year in detention. So citizens, an average citizen, was afraid. And that's a confirmation that we were in a crisis in the country. So that's...
Well, Henry, I'm sure that you've been following the conversation between me and Hakainde Hichilema. Have you?
Yes, I've been following it very well.
What is your immediate response?
First of all, Shaka, Hakainde Hichilema is a politician, and his response is mixed politics with the truth. Then we should separate politics and truth. Then we find out what is true. Part of the stuff he's saying is true, and part of the stuff is what you should expect from somebody who has failed the election.
What is true, for example?
The truth is that when you consider the justice system we have, somehow it is selective. I agree with him. Because if you look at some of the people who have been in jail for minor crimes and have been jailed for quite some years, but others who commit big offenses, just because they are connected and they're in politics, they don't go to jail. Another thing, Hakainde Hichilema cannot tell the country that he didn't make a mistake. He made a mistake. You know, One of the proverbs in my country, it says, "Ubufumu buchindika bene." When somebody is a king, he deserves the respect that comes with that kingship of that person. Mr. Edgar, His Excellency Edgar Chagwa Lungu, is the president of Zambia. And by virtue of it, he's supposed to be respected. And when you see the act which Mr. Akainde Hichilema committed by not yielding to the motorcade, it is stipulated in the laws of Zambia that anybody should yield to the motorcade of the president. But he didn't do that. What does it imply?
Well, first of all, he was not the only one that in fact happened to be on that road. There were many, many other people who had been on that road. They were not arrested. And even if, in fact, he were the only one who was on that road, would he really have deserved, for example, being put in a maximum prison for 4 years for what appeared to be an unbearable offense instead of a traffic offense?
Of course, the offense doesn't match to the treason case which he was given. The fact of the matter is, those people were on that road because of Mr. Akainde Hichilema being on that road. If Mr. Akainde Hichilema wasn't on that road, all those people wasn't going to be on that road. But he was there. That's why they were there. But the thing is, I said immediately he was caught and he was given a treason charge. I said he committed an offense, but the triability of a treason case is very questionable. But the fact that, you know, we may not be privy to the information which the security has for them to charge him with treason, unless the security people have a certain information which we are not privy to, which made them give him the charge of treason. Unless they put it in public, said we charged him of treason because of ABCD. You know, the security people are privy to a certain information which we, the public, we don't. Maybe they have it, and we were going to know about it if we went to court. But we never went to court. So it remained concealed to them unless they feel like they should release it and tell us that that's why we charged him with a treason case. As it is, we are all in the shadow, and we are judging according to the pictures we saw and what transpired. And most of the people have said, okay, the charge of treason was too much, but he deserved a good charge, and he has to behave too. Respect the president, that's all. Moreover, Mr. His Excellency Edgar Gachagua Lungu and Akainde Hichilema, they are both Zambians and they are brothers. Why mistreating your brother, and why not respecting your brother too? When your brother is a president, respect him as a president. You don't have to show your muscle. When somebody is in authority, he's in authority. Give him that respect which comes with the seat which he's occupying. The only thing here, politics should not get into our leader's head. They need to act the way they're supposed to act as human beings and put Zambia first, not their personal egos.
I put it to Mr. Hichilema as to why he does not recognize President Edgar Lungu. And he said that part of the problem really lies in an election that he felt that was not free, fair, and credible. And that, in fact, he filed a petition, which, of course, as you know, was dismissed by the judiciary on a technicality. To what extent do you have confidence in the independence of the Zambian judiciary system?
I have it to a certain percentage, not 100%, not 100%. But him refusing the results of the election, which were held last year, it's mind-boggling. We have independent observers who came to Zambia, and they have said the election were fair. But his behavior and his action, he took the matter to court. And what happened when he went to court? He failed. The court ruled and respect the judgment of the court. His behavior are equivalent to somebody like somebody who has hacked maybe your computer, and he has manipulated the data in a computer, and he has no evidence to tell you that he manipulated the data, and he has put in figures in the system, knowing that he has changed the data, knowing that you don't know anything that is happening, And he keeps arguing that I've won. While he knows what he has done without knowing that you know and you have outplayed him. Because if his claims are genuine, why not come up with substantial evidence and present it to the court? The court gave you enough time according to what is stipulated in the Constitution. He had 14 days to do that. He did, but he went on. He was even given another grace period. He went on to amend the papers he filed, which means if you have all the evidence with you, you go to court with all the evidence. Moreover, those who seek equity must first check their hands, must go with clean hands. In the election and what they did, were their hands clean? That's a question mark. If their hands is clean, they are clean too. I don't think so. So the ruling of the court, I respect it, and our judicial system when it comes to matters of the election, they are quite fair, knowing that they are not alone, but the Electoral Commission is also there to back whatever results they have.
Interesting. In part two of our interview with Mr. Hichilema, he thanks the media, religious leaders in Zambia, and the courageous members of the international community for the role they played in securing his release.
The regional community, Southern African Development Community, African Union, paid a blind eye to the situation, negative situation in Zambia. And someone has had to rise to the occasion. Hence, President Obasanjo. We thank him for that. Right Honorable Patricia Scotland, Secretary General of the Commonwealth, we really appreciate her efforts. Very methodical, succinct, clear thinking, and grasped the issues very quickly as to what was causing the tension and problems in Zambia. So we thank all of those. But I take this opportunity to thank the media, local, regional, international media, including media in America. Our story, I was being told, ran on New York Times, Washington Post, American Congress, individuals in the Congress, in the Senate, issued statements in our support. We're grateful to them. European Union Parliament took time to debate our incarceration in Zambia. And we thank them for that. And issued very strong words about the denial of human rights, the breakdown in the rule of law. The things that I talked about earlier. We also have organizations like yours. We are grateful to the media. And that's why we have to continue fighting for media freedoms. Because if the media did not continue with our story, I would still be in prison today. So we need to thank the media. Local, regional, international. Even this interview is very well appreciated to amplify for those who were in denial, for those who were afraid, for those who thought Zambia is not an issue because it's been peaceful. I think these are the reasons, only some of the reasons, why it had to take the intervention of people in the categories, including the key figures like President Obasanjo and Baroness Scotland, to intervene, to move to a point where the country had to accept that it was in a crisis, and hence what you call a deal, which was the second part of your question, that we now have to address these challenges if we were to keep our country peaceful, stable, and therefore create a platform for development.
How are they going to be dealt with?
We will have to go through a dialogue process to resolve these issues. We will have to structure a project that will checklist in the many areas I've articulated to you: human rights and freedoms, rule of law, electoral conduct, management, so to call it, judicial inadequacies, the whole criminal justice system, the police acting on political party members to arrest citizens, the loss of professionalism in the police, How can we restore that? Institutions of government. Many, including revenue collectors, being used to suppress citizens. How do we forestall this? How do we get citizens to have recourse to courts of law, and they will be heard and heard in a just, fair, and timely manner? So we'll checklist all of this. That's my understanding. And then agree priorities. Human rights is not a negotiable issue. Human freedoms, freedom of speech, assembly, conscience, association, praise, worship is not negotiable. So those are enshrined in our constitution already. The issue now under this dialogue project is to say, how do we assure that every citizen of Zambia will enjoy their human rights and freedoms? What aspects of the judiciary is causing us these problems, and what do we need to do? So is the case in other areas. And agree remedies, who should implement, who should effect these remedies, by when, so that we can return our country into normalcy. The time we'll have an election, we can have an independent electoral commission superintending over the electoral process, just as an example. And there's need for political will. On our part, we are committed, despite the torture, the degrading treatment, inhuman treatment that we went through in prison.
Tell us about how you were treated while in the prison. What was the experience like, really?
Degrading. Inhuman treatment. We were made to sleep on the court floor. Remember, we were arrested on the 10th in this house, in this very house, in this house where you are seated.
Yes.
That's where I was arrested from.
Yes.
And this house was broken into by a horde platoon of over 200 to 300 heavily armed policemen who came in the night, and broke their way from the gate and broke into this house. I know from the point you are seated, the angle you are seated, you can't see the damage. We've decided not to repair the house.
Really?
Because the police have refused to do in Zambia what we call a police report. We were arrested in a brutal manner. They didn't come to arrest me, they came to kill.
To kill?
Absolutely.
But all that for what?
Later on, we got to know that it was for a purported treason case, which I'm sure you followed very well. But they stay with this. Just so I can answer your question. So, from the time we were arrested, we were dehumanized, we were tortured. And how? That's the question. We slept on the floor.
Dehumanized? Yes. You slept on the floor. What else?
My first 8 days, I was put in a room in solitary confinement with fecal matter on the floor. Absolutely.
I saw pictures.
No lights. No electricity, no toilet, no water. If I wanted to answer the call of nature, I had to shout. Someone had to take me out, heavily armed, guarded.
How would you shout?
By voice and by banging on the gates of the cell. So that was over. Then we were taken to prison. Only after the magistrate ruled that I was not, it was illegal to detain me in such a place, isolated place. So I was taken to prison, mixing with convicts. Doesn't matter to me. Those are fellow citizens, human beings. Congestion.
But those have been convicted.
Absolutely not. I was a suspect. It's congestion in cells. The first cell I was thrown in maximum prison, I was sharing it with 178 inmates.
In a room?
This veranda is too big. 178 people. And you couldn't sleep there. You sleep by sitting the way I'm seated. Another guy is fitted inside you in the manner I'm showing you. And so the line goes this way, this way, this way. And that's where we spent the early nights.
Are you bitter in as far as the government of Zambia is concerned, or are you bitter about the decision made by probably the head of state?
The normal expectation is that I should be bitter. I should be bitter because I was made to answer the call of nature in those cells, then moved to a isolated cell, 2 meters by 2.5 meters, where I was spending 16 hours a day locked in there. And to answer the call of nature, both urinal and fecal, I had to use a bucket. And every morning I would take it out and empty it myself. One would say I should be bitter. I am not bitter. There is no time to be bitter. Because if we focus on bitterness, then we'll fall exactly in the same trap where we have been put in, or where we were put in. We will be no different from those who put us through these horrible conditions.
Henry, your reaction?
First of all, Mr. Kahinde, when you committed that offense, he wasn't a political prisoner. We should differentiate somebody who has committed an offense and a political prisoner. He committed an offense by not yielding to the motorcade of the president. That's why he was thrown into jail. That was not, we can't consider that as a political prisoner. A political prisoner is somebody who's standing up for the right thing, maybe honorary, speaking of what is good for the nation. Then he gets arrested for that. Another thing is, our prisons in Africa, they are not a luxury hotel. As much as we sympathize the treatment they gave him, they would have given him a better treatment. But our prisons are really pathetic. They're not luxury hotels. It's up to now the leaders, even him, if in future he becomes a president, God willing, he should work on it. Improve them, because those people who are there are human and they need to be given human rights even though they are prisoners. And two, he has talked about the manner in which he was arrested. Of course, he's not a criminal. The reason of a battalion of police officers storming the house is unacceptable to me. I don't believe it and I don't subscribe to it. They were supposed just to write him a call out and let him report to the police station and arrest him. But storming somebody's house, like the way he has put it, the way it happens, to my understanding of politics and the way things should be, is unacceptable. People can do better. Do we blame that on the president? Absolutely no. The police service have their duty to play, and they have to act professionally and do it in the right manner. Did they do it in the right manner? To me, no. They can do better than that. And when you talk about, I heard you asking him, I say, why did it have to take the people from Obasanjo, from Nigeria, and the Secretary of Commonwealth to come and speak to our government to have them released? That is also troubling to me. While we have people who can mediate in the country, who have been trying to do that. I have a great respect to our great bishop, Bishop Teresh Fompundu, who has been a bishop for quite a long time. And he has dealt with, in fact, all the presidents, and he has a great experience. He came up with how the two can work together and secure the release of Hakainde Hichilema. I know the government had, but they were dragging their feet to come up with the solution. Finally, his effort and the effort of others worked it out. But the thing is, as Zambians, why don't we find a solution? We don't have to wait for somebody across the Atlantic Ocean or across Indian Ocean to come and give us a solution in our own countries, when we can come together as brothers and sisters, put their politics aside and find a solution to any simple matter we are facing. When you look at When you look at what these two individuals played by coming to Zambia and trying to negotiate, the words they used and what they said, I suspect that's what the people, like the bishop and his colleagues, they're the same words they were using to secure the release of Hakainde Hichilema. And another thing I like about him is he's not harboring hatred in his heart. He's ready to forgive and to soldier ahead. I hope he's sincere in his heart with what he's saying. I hope he's not playing politics, because time for politics is gone. And I would love the two leaders have a forgiveness service or reconciliation service. And they should be held accountable to the words they are pronouncing. Hakainde is saying, I've forgiven him and I'm not holding it to my heart. That's a big heart, and that's a good thing. And I'm looking forward to see what he has proclaimed in action and not just in words.
Mr. Sakala, talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Zambian heart and soul. Given the alleged crimes that he may have committed, do you think that he deserved to be jailed in a maximum prison without being convicted?
That's a good question. When you see, who goes to maximum prison? Somebody who has been convicted. But was Hakainde Hichilema convicted? The offense which was given, does it equivalent to the case he committed? Me, I say absolutely no. He was supposed to be given a fair case and treated according and punished according to the crime he committed. But sending him to the maximum prison, and I know who sends the person who have committed the crime to a maximum prison is the court. But the court did not send Hakainde Hichilema to maximum prison. The police. Where did the police get the powers? Or the prison service, where did they get the powers to send somebody to maximum prison who is not convicted, whose case is still in the courts? That's why you see the lapse of institution not acting independently. They are subjectively in their way of carrying business.
So why do you absorb, for example, President Lungu for not being responsible for this particular case, really? Because let's face it, you talk about the police, but the police, my friend, serves at the discretion of the president, who also happens to be the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Don't you honestly think that the buck stops with the president?
Actually, we have been hearing that they are independent, but they are subjective to a certain percentage. But whenever, if at all it is happening, or if at all the president issued those directives, if the police personnel in charge are professionals, they have to conduct themselves to the high levels of dignity and discipline and do the right thing. They're just not supposed to follow orders anyhow. You follow orders which are right and they are within the law. When the president tells you do this, he doesn't tell you that, okay, now go and manhandle somebody. You have now to use your professionalism and the training which you have acquired with your intellect and the integrity to do the duty as you have been assigned and following the law.
Thank you. Finally, Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema tells VOA the country must adopt policies that provide social economic justice for all the people of the Republic of Zambia. Let's talk about the vision thing. What is your vision for Zambia?
We would like to see the resources of our country tremendous resources of our country, endowments of our country, be it land, be it water, be it minerals, to be managed through the right policies in an efficient manner, effective manner, to deliver economic and social value to the population, to the people of Zambia. Social support for the vulnerable, which is a very critical issue, making sure that our people have food in their homes, making sure that all school going, age group is accessing school, good quality education, and when they complete school, they have an opportunity to be employed, they have an opportunity to be entrepreneurs. An opportunity that I was given myself in my early age. My dear friend, I came from a village. I went to school without shoes, and I was given this opportunity. Our vision is to give this child the same or even a better opportunity I was given. But to do that, there's a missing link in the middle here. To connect these two, we need a lever. And that lever is good quality management, good quality leadership, which I think is a challenge not only for Zambia, but for many African countries, for many countries of the world. Good quality leadership.
How would you manage the mines so that they could benefit the vast majority of Zambians?
That resource, which is not renewable, a mine, minerals are a wasting asset. They're not renewable. You can't grow them like we grow vegetables. They must be extracted in a correct manner. I'm talking of environmentally correct manner. Mm-hmm. Very important. Mm-hmm. So that we don't create a situation where the extraction of minerals breeds damage to life, both human and other. That the exploitation of this resource in terms of ownership of the mines is structured correctly to make sure Zambians have an opportunity to be part of the owners of mines, but not just the mine operator, but contractors in the mining sector. Zambian companies, Zambian individuals, and in some cases in partnership with international capital, international skills, working together, must exploit these resources in that manner so that we enhance the value that cascades to the citizens of Zambia. And indeed, others who provide technology, who provide capital. And that I'm talking about a situation where a job that is available in the mining sector and is doable by a Zambian, it must go to a Zambian.
I gather that time is not our best ally, but listening to you, you strike me obviously like someone who is like a poster boy of democracy. Are you a Democrat from the deepest, better part of your Zambian heart?
I'm a Democrat. And this is what got me into prison.
But what about critics who say, wait a minute, the UPND has not held a national party convention since 2006.
It's not true. Absolutely not true. We call them General Assembly. Maybe it's a nomenclature. They don't understand the nomenclature. They call it a convention. We call it a General Assembly, right? We had the General Assembly, just to give you an example, to show you that's not factually correct. 2006, 2009. So, absolutely not true. If there's a democratic party in this country, it's ours. And, you know, the issue is that if you are a liberal at heart, and from birth, like I am, you cannot fail to advance democratic values in what you do.
Akayende, who inspired you? Who is the person, frankly, that lent you his shoulders so that you could climb on them and see a little bit further?
I think it's a Zambian society. Born in a village, in a grass-thatched hut. My birth details indicate that I was born not in a hospital, not in a maternity wing, but in a grass-thatched hut in the village, as a child of the huge extended family.
How many children were you?
From my mother and father, four. But my cousins in my culture are my brothers and sisters. Probably we are growing up similar age group of 30 guys. Guys and girls, age group, sharing a meal every single day. It is that community, it is that society that bred us to understand that having gone to school without shoes, first 3 years, in the village, every morning ran to school without shoes, even in the cold weather. It is that inspiration that a child from the village, given an opportunity, can compete with any other in the world. What inspiration other than that would I ask for? And then after leaving school, given an opportunity to work for 1 or 2 years, and from the age of 26, working for myself, who do I owe all of that? It's to the people of Zambia. And that's why I would like to pay back to those people. That, I think, is the collective inspiration. But also inbuilt liberalism, rule of law, democracy, freedoms. And I believe now, over years, having gone to school later on in the UK to do our master's and working there, traveling the world, I have personally took a view that without human rights, without freedoms, you will basically restrict potential in your population.
What is the single most important decision that you have made during your life, and what about the single most regrettable decision during the same period?
To go to school. That's why I would like Zambian children to go to school.
Right.
African children, children of the world, to go to school. It opens the doors. You can't even describe how many doors there are uncounted. So, single most regrettable decision is that, if you like situation, is that we as a people are allowing our population to suffer, to go to bed without food. Amidst wealth, we have abject poverty. That, I must tell you, my dear friend, my dear brother, makes me turn in my bed every night. And that's what basically fighting for their rights, for their opportunity, is what saw me in prison.
Welcome back. Our discussion today is about different views regarding Zambian politics. Our guest joins us from the VOA New York Bureau, and he is Henry Sakala, who is founder of Patriotic Front Party, Zambian Diaspora America. Before we continue our conversation, let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa. The 72nd United Nations General Assembly opens with a theme focusing on people, striving for peace and a decent life for all on a sustainable planet. Host Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the UNGA's theme and its importance for the people of Africa. On the next, Straight Talk Africa.
Henry, are you there?
I am here, Shaka.
Your reaction so far, my brother?
You know, they said you shall know them by their fruits, and their fruits will tell you who they are and what they are going to bring on the table. People have been tested with public service, and they have been given an opportunity to try to serve the people. Look at their record. Did they serve the people faithfully, or did they milk the people? I leave that to investigative journalism to take its course. You asked a very important question. You asked him, are you democratic? Have you held a convention since you became a UPND president? I won't say yes, I won't say no. You heard what he said. But I also leave that to investigative journalism like you to do the investigation and come up with the answer.
Let's go a little bit back at the elections, for example, that you said had actually been won by incumbent President Edgar Lungu. I talked with a lot of journalists downtown, Lusaka, interacted with a lot of people at the University of Zambia, for example, where we held a town hall meeting. It was very, very obvious, for example, that the results of that particular election were a little bit unacceptable in the sense that Zambia's constitution demands that you have to have a magic number of 50% plus one vote if you are to win the election in the first round. And we talk about the difference of under 14,000 votes between the incumbent president and Hakainde Hichilema. It seems to me, frankly, that when you look at the statistics, the country was pretty much divided, really, between the two. Do you sincerely think that the incumbent president won the presidential race in the first round? Is it really possible?
He won.
When you look
and
at the difference.
Here are the facts. When I look at the difference, yes, he won. That's why he was. That's why he's a president. That's why he was declared.
And he got 50%. He got 50% plus one vote.
What is in the paper? Because if you look at the process is well articulated, and all the parties have their representative checking what is happening, and according to what is on the paper, and according to the people who have been given the mandate to count the votes, according to what they are counted. We receive, and what we have received is what we have at hand, and that's what we are going to go with. They said he won, and he won.
Let's face it, Henry. I was repeatedly.
Okay, bring it on.
I was repeatedly told, actually, that the results of not only perhaps the last year's vote, even the one before, were not actually reflections of the will of the people, but rather were reflections of the people who actually count the vote.
Actually, are we dealing with the assumptions or we are dealing with the facts on the table, the numbers which have been counted and they have presented to the Electoral Commission? That's what we are going to go with. What was presented, if it's not correct, let them come with substantial evidence and present it.
My brother,
and then argue from that point.
But my brother, in this particular case, you know as well as I do that the petition was dismissed on a technicality.
Yes.
Why couldn't the petition be heard?
Actually, when you are petitioning, you need to have all the needed material at place. You don't go to petition with a half-baked case. Then in the process, you start amending.
I'm afraid I have seen evidence, frankly, that there was sufficient material and, in fact, was filed within the allowable time.
Were you shown the evidence of amendments to the files, which they did?
Basically, I am trying to tell you here that the evidence I saw, I was satisfied that, in fact, at the end of the day, it was the call made by the courts, and I was also told, I have not been able to verify this, that the call was made precisely because there was political pressure coming from above.
Because we didn't have a president by then. When you say from above, what do you mean?
Obviously, there was a president because, look, he had already served more than 1 year in the office, and he was
but
in
he
was, office.
He wasn't sworn in as a president, so there's no way he can apply pressure when he's not sworn in as a president. He was declared as a winner, and then they petitioned. By then, he didn't have the power to act as a president, and he wasn't sworn in. So when you say there was a political pressure, that's a question mark, unless you know something which I don't know, which you are free to tell me.
In fact, you have a point, because according to the Zambian constitution, in that particular case, the executive power should have actually been transferred to the Speaker of the National Assembly. But in this particular case, I am told that did not happen.
That did not happen. And you say according to the, you know, people were trying to manipulate the law and force the government to do what is not in the law. Let the law take its course. And the people who are in the Judicial Commission, they know what is supposed to be done. And they did according to what they know is supposed to be done. You know, when you are dealing with the opposition, it's not everything that the opposition need to oppose.
You have a minute, There's Henry. Something which... You have a minute. Time is not our best ally.
All right, Shaka. To summarize, thank you very much for being in this program, and may God bless you. And Zambians, please, let's unite together. We are all Zambian.
No, sir.
Let's do something
which is good. You can answer the question. You can answer the question, really.
The question is, the judicial system did what is fit according to the Constitution and the situation which was prevailing at the moment in the country. You know, the system has to use to exercise subconscious and do what they think is right and what is better for the nation, rather than throwing the nation in chaos.
I see what you mean.
And they did that to prevent chaos in the nation.
I see what you mean, but isn't it also true, by the way, that almost all the judges were, in fact, had been appointed by incumbent President Lungu?
Those are the powers given by the Constitution, and he has all the right to do according to what the Constitution says.
I see.
But their work is not subjected to the master who appointed them. They're supposed to do their work professionally,
very interesting,
according to what is written.
Very interesting. You know, earlier you said that the international observers had announced the election, but I'm sure you know what happened in Kenya on September 1st. Don't you?
Yes, I know. I applaud Kenya. And you see, the judicial system did the right thing according to the findings which were given to them.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. Before we go, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the passing of Canon Justice Muheru Byagagaide. He died September 3rd in Kampala, Uganda, a public official and cabinet minister in the Ugandan government. He will be remembered for his impeccable integrity and ethics. In his book, A Miraculous Journey, he tells his life story from humble beginnings in Rukunjiri, southwestern Uganda, to becoming one of the most influential public officials in the region and a respected role model for Africa's youth. Mr. Byagagaide was born September 15, 1926. He was buried September 7th at his home in Mbarara. He was 91. We extend our condolences to his wife, family, and friends. May his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Hakainde Hichilema and Henry Sakala, who joined us live via the New York Bureau. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Zambia. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.